So, what we're going to do today is looking at some of the, what you could say would be part of the physical design. If you remember, we Dipti started with the conceptual design, and then we went into logical design, designing tables and relationships. The final thing would be to add and change that structure so it's efficient. So we think about how data files are stored, what type of indexes we're going to have, so that we have a database. I think it is. So, okay. I need to be closer, I guess. Yeah. So, we are here, we talked about security. Now we are talking about indexes and a little bit about data administration or database administration. First, a couple of messages about next week. So next week, Wednesday, we're going to have concurrency control. Dipti is going to talk about database support for having multiple users updating the same data at the same time, and what are the problems and how we can deal with it. Next Thursday and Friday, we're going to just review what we've been through, going back, maybe look at some exam questions and trying to draw the larger picture. On Thursday we're going to be here, not in the S building, because they're going to rearrange the lecture hall for exams, so they're going to push back all the seats. So we're going to be here on Thursday, and of course on a Friday. If there is any topic that you think we should spend more time on, then give me a hint. Either talk to me or send an email or just give us a hint what you would like to review. I'll try to draw the larger picture, and as I said, I will most likely find some exam questions and we can think about them together and see how the way of thinking and what we would like to see. But if there is something that you feel that this is really still fuzzy, I mean, if it is one thing, if everything is fuzzy, then it's harder to point out anything. But if there is something that you would like to spend more time on going through, even we could pick some exam questions for one specific part of the course, then we could do that. And then Friday we're going to just continue. I think I've told you that I will be making, I do have a table with all the topics we've been through. And in that table, I have a priority 1 and 2. And I do say whether we expect you to know about this or whether we expect you to be able to use it, show it in the program, or show how to make an SQL query, and whether you should be able to discuss, evaluate solutions and technologies. And not everything we're covering in this course is at the same level and same priority. So I'm going to make that list, and it will change this year because we didn't have much time on indexing and administration. So some of these topics will be lower in priority than what they have been before. But we'll go through that table, and I will, of course, put it on the blackboard as well so you can see what topics you may want to focus on, because these are the ones we think are more important. Okay, indexes. So what are these? And now I'm gonna. One reason why I'm not gonna go into much depth here is that I do hope that you learned about tree structures, tree traversals, balanced trees, through this course or the algorithm course. So we can interplay a little bit what you already know. So what I will be spending more time on is trying to get you to understand why indexes are good in some cases and why not so good in other cases. Because there are cases in which you will not, it's actually a bad idea to add an index. It's just going to slow down your system. So understanding that is something that is useful. So why do we need indexes? First of all, big database systems are still to a large degree using disk drives, hard disk drives. So even though memory is growing and we have some more, some faster storage devices that are not the regular hard disk type, when you have huge amount of data, you still end up having hard disk drives. And they are slow. If you try to scan some gigabytes of data on the hard disk drive, it's going to take a lot of time. So when you have big databases, you don't want to scan through your whole database looking for something, if you can avoid it. And if you think about join, what's join doing? Well, it's taking one tuple from one file and going through the other file looking for tuples that match. So now, if you have 3 billion tuples to multiply with another 6 billion, then you need to scan through that file 3 million times, 6 million times, which is not very effective. So you have to scan, unless you have huge memory, so you can store everything in memory, do it once. But if you had that big memory, you wouldn't have to have the database stored on disks in the first place. So you usually don't have it. And there are some databases do have some smart algorithms for doing, so you minimize the number of scans. But if you could do that, this joining based on just a value in an index tree, you're going to be much faster, because you just need to load the index tree. And based on the index tree, you can hopefully be quick at searching the other tree, finding it in the other tree. So they may reduce search time. And if you think about it, they are quite useful also for integrity purposes. So you remember we have two important integrity requirements. We have the entity integrity requirement, meaning that in a table there should be a primary key, and the primary key needs to be unique. So how then, the database, when we insert a new row, what would the database need to do? It needs to check, is that primary key already in use? Because then it will refuse this. So whenever there is an insert, then the database needs to find, is the primary key already in use? So if you have an index tree of the primary keys, that's very fast. You just need to look it up. If you find it in the tree, you know it's there. You don't have to scan the whole database with all the data. You just look at the index tree. And the same with referential integrity, foreign keys. If I try to delete a row, let's say a person in my database, and we have another database or another table in database with telephone numbers linking to that person, so when I try to delete, I need to find, are there any telephone numbers? So I need to go through all the telephone numbers to see if anyone is registered on this person. Again, if you have an index tree in the telephone database or telephone table, if you have an index on all the user IDs, then it will be fast. You just look up an index. If it's there, you know there is a foreign key, there is something pointing, so you can't allow this record to be deleted. Or you have to, if you remember what you could do with foreign keys, you could set null, or you could delete, or you could stop it from happening. But the thing is that the database needs to know, and the index can be quite good at doing this effectively. So for primary keys and foreign keys, you will find that most database systems will automatically add indexes on top of it. You don't have to worry about it. It will happen because it's so important for the performance of joins. Because foreign keys, you need to join, and for foreign keys, you need to check for the integrity. So because of that, the indexes will come. But for other purposes, we as developers will decide where it makes sense to add an index. And then we need to understand what cases the indexes are useful. The typical structure in the database for indexes would be B-trees, actually B+. There have been a generation of B-trees. They've been improved a little bit. But the one we're going to go through is the B+ tree. And the textbook, there is an appendix F that only exists in digital format. So it's not printed in the book, it's digital format, which is good because then you can just find it. I linked it in there, so you can find it on Blackboard. It describes how B-trees work. We're just not going to go in depth here, just give you an idea. But it is it's a balanced tree. The B is for balanced. So it's like you are going through the 2-3 trees, 3-4 trees, something like this. Where you have a number of indices that point down in the tree to subtrees. And the idea, the database, is that we try to minimize the number of times we need to go to disk. because, as we're saying, reading from disk is slow. And on the disk, you would read a disk block at a time. It could be 4K, it could be 8K of data. And what we try to do is to put as many indexes as possible within that data block. So when we retrieve a block, we get many indexes. Because then we have here what I called bushy shallow trees. It's not very deep, but it has many branches. So it's very wide and shallow, because we will typically end up going to the bottom of the tree. So we would like to have a short distance from the leaf to the root as possible. And then we make it as wide as possible. Every node has many, many, many children. Because then getting to the bottom would mean we need one to visit one node at each level. I'll show you in a second. Yeah, so it's balanced. So meaning that what you've learned about tree trees, about how to split node or how to merge nodes in the case of deletion, all that mechanism works here as well. It's just that the B is much larger than 3 or 4 that you typically see. So this is an example of a B tree, B plus tree. So these are, let's say, the primary keys. So SG, so a top level, this is the root. And typically in the database, the root disk block, the root block of the index tree will be cached in memory. So typically when you load the database, it would load the at least the most used indexes. So they will have the index and the root block in the tree. So the first one, you don't need to access the disk at all. Now, in this case, how many disk access do you need to get to the data? So this is the data file. The bottom here will be the data file. And then you have levels of index indexes on top. So how many disk blocks will we need to get to read one of those records where we have, for instance, SG15? Any suggestions? In worst case, I mean, it might be that some of these disk blocks and the root might be cached. Maybe some of them have already been read, so they're in memory. But if they are not, if you start with a cold database, the top is read, so you need to get level 1, level 2, and then you need to read the actual database file. Because this is the database file where all the data is. These others are just index files. They just have the index values and pointers to the next level. The interesting thing about this structure, if you look at each node, it has n or n minus 1, depending on how you want to start. So if you say that there are n pointers out from each, it has n minus 1 indices. So on the top, if you would like to find, let's say, SG37, we go on top and we say, is SG37 less than or larger than SG14? It's larger, so we need to go to the right. Now, SG37, less than equal or larger than? It's less than or equal, then we go to left. And then SG37 is the leaf node, and then we have a link directly to the disk to the database file, and we can load the proper record, the proper block from the disk file. So there were 3, 1, 2, 3. One interesting, if you look at the leaf nodes here, you can see that one of the pointers is pointing to the sibling. It's pointing to the next sibling. It's not pointing to a data. And any ideas why that's the case? Why do we want to link the blocks at the leaf node level? If you add, you will find the right spot to add it. So you could go to the first and you just look it up and then split. And if it needs split, you split up the tree. That's absolutely one way we could do it. But what about range queries? Let's say we like to find all products with a code, product code starting with SG. What do I need to do here? Well, I start from the top and say, is SG less than or equal to SG14? Yes, it is. Is it less than or equal to SG5? Yes, it is. And from the first block, I find SG5, and then I can just go to the next block. And I go through the next block, and then the last block, there's no SGs. And I know I've been through them all. Because here, and if I would like to sort them, They're already there. I could get to the first one, and the rest, they are in sorted order. So this gives me a sorted order, which is good for, as I said, for ordering, and is good for range queries. So that's why they did, because otherwise you could do one block at a time, and then they had to go up a tree and traverse up and down and up and down. Now for ordering and for range, and I could go to the first one and then just scan it over. So it's a convenient structure for that purpose. Yeah. So as with other balanced trees, the root node is only must have at least two children, because if you can fit everything in one child, then you will keep it all in root node. So once you need to split, you split it in two children, and you have one root node that points to the two children. The interior nodes, like in a balanced tree, you would like to keep it between n half and n nodes, so it's balanced. And because what you would like to make sure is that it is as shallow as possible. You don't want it to be deep, and because of that, you try to keep it n and a half. And if it's less than n and a half, you start merging nodes. If it's larger, you start splitting nodes. And it's always balanced. And as you can see, leaf nodes are ordered. Or indexes, if you look at the leaf nodes, you can find indexes in their order, which is good for a number of queries. So how deep would such a B+tree become? And it depends on how many indices we can put into one block. So let's say if there's 8 kilobytes, then it depends on, are we dealing with ints, are we dealing with strings, are we dealing with constant length strings, are we dealing with variable length strings, or the dates, what is the type? And depending on the type and the number of bytes, we can say how many we can put in. And then, of course, we need to know how many bytes do we need for each of the pointers, depending on how big the tree can be. We also need to refer to points to the trees and have a tree pointers. But in this case, if you assume that we have 341 values and 342 pointers, then if you have just the root node, it can handle the 341 values. Now, if you add one level, then you have 342 pointers for the first one, and you have 341 for each of the children. So then you get 116,000. So by just two levels, meaning that with two accesses you get to the disk block, we can actually index almost 120,000. Just two disk accesses. And typically, the data file, if you go up, the data files are typically, the records are typically much larger, because you have the indexed field and you have the names and the phone number and whatever. So they tend to be much larger, so there are much fewer. So there are many more disk blocks on the data file than there are disk blocks in the index file. So if you add one more level, this is an exponential function. So if you add one more level, we are talking about 39, almost 40 million nodes with just three levels in the tree. Meaning with three disk blocks, we can get to any node. So you can see if we can find, we quickly find it, or if you know that this is a value that it can be indexed, then we can access it three blocks, and we can access up to 40 million nodes. So as you can see, we like it to be, this is best case, because it might be somewhere between half full and full. So in real life, it will typically be a bit, one more level, because you don't have it all nicely filled up, typically. But theoretically, this is as much as you can index in n levels. When we talk about indexes, we differentiate between what we call the primary index and secondary index. The primary index is the index on the primary key. Think of it this way. And typically, that is the way the actual file is stored. So it's stored, ordered by its primary index. And the primary index is always unique because we cannot have two rows with the same primary key. And we can have only one because that's the main order, main sorting order. So if you tried, I don't know if you played around with that in PHP MyAdmin, if you try to set something as the primary key, you can't add two primary keys. You can have a composite primary key. So the primary key may consist of several attributes, but it's just one key. You can't have two saying they were both primary keys and or primary indexes. And now, because of that, sometimes you would like to have secondary indexes as well. So let's say you have a primary index on the person table, primary index on the personal number, but maybe everyone has a unique email address too. And then you can have an index on the email. Do you remember from the conceptual modeling what we used for that? We had primary key, we had one other, alternate key, yes. So alternate keys would end up, so this is the link. So when we in the conceptual model say this is an alternate key, we would at this stage design an index to make sure that it is an alternate key and to make sure that we can quickly retrieve based on the alternate key. So that's the link between the conceptual model to the physical modeling. But the secondary index doesn't have to be unique. So if you have a person database, for instance, if you do many queries on last names, it's convenient to have an index on last names, but we typically don't have just one person with the same with the last name in the database. So because of that, it's not unique. But it could still be sorted. We will still sort them, and it just means that we will have a range. So if you go up to this example here, so here the first one might be Hansen, Iversen, and they would just be having the same value. But the first one will be down there, and then you will just put them as siblings sidewise. But it is possible, as I said, to define it to be unique. And we'll see at the SQL statement how we can define it to be unique. You can have many secondary indexes per file or per table. As we said, for the primary index, you can have only one, because you have only one primary key. So you can have only one primary index. But you can have multiple secondary indexes. You can have index on telephone number. You can have index on last name. You can index on email address. So you can have multiple indexes. And if you have large tables, then you may have quite an improvement in access time. If you like to have sorted by last name, for instance, or if you like to have every user with the last name Hansen, then these will be much faster than if you had to scan the whole long data file. We are okay with this up now? Seems understandable. So, what do we do in SQL? Yeah, there's one thing I should mention here, and that is, oh sorry, that was the wrong way. Indexes may not be very useful. So, if you, for instance, have gender, then you have just two values, male or female. Then you would typically have to scan most anyway. So if you think about going through the index and you need to go to the data file, then you need to look up the data file many, many times. And you will have multiple blocks, multiple records in the same block. So in that case, if you use the index, it will actually take longer time going to the index, because for each index, you will look up a block, and that block may have been looked up before, but you need to look it up again and again, because you it's not very specific. So if you have fields that have very few values and many records, it's faster typically to just read the whole database file and just pick out the females, because then you go through, you will most likely need to go through most of the file anyway, because half of them, so you can expect that the last one is equally, the chance is equally large as a male and a female if there are equally many. So you'll have to go through, most cases, through the whole file anyway. And it's much faster to just go through the file rather than first go through the index, up and down through the index, and end up having to access the data file many more times. So indexes don't work very well if we have the domain, meaning the possible values, are very limited, and there are many with the same value. Then we may as well just read the whole data file. It's as good. Yeah, but if we do have like last names, like date of birth, like phone numbers, these tend to be just very few who share a value, and then it makes sense to add an index, especially if the file is large, and especially if these values don't change too often. We'll come back to that. In SQL, we have all databases will have a create index statement in the SQL. It's not standard SQL, but all databases will offer that statement. And in MySQL, you say create, and then you can say whether it's unique or not. If you say unique, then it means that you won't accept duplicates in the index. If it's not, then it works fine even if there are duplicates. Then the name of the index, and what table, and what are the columns. And if you don't want the index anymore, we just do drop index. So it's very similar to table, create table, create index, drop index, and we just say what indexes are. And this is typically for secondary indexes, because for primary index, the way to create a primary index is to create a primary key. When you create a primary key, the database will itself generate the primary index. So you have no primary index statement. There are some disadvantages if you think about it, and that is it's slower to insert data. Why is that? Well, we have to insert the data, but we also have to update the tree. The index tree. So we need to insert a node in the index tree, and maybe that causes the node to split, and maybe it causes the parent to split, and the parent to split. And if we delete, we may need to merge index tree node and its parent and its parent. So it's quite a lot of overhead in doing this. So it's actually slower to do updates. The storage space, we of course need disk storage for the index file. Typically not the worst thing these days, but if you have index on large fields, then it may become an issue. If you have a text field that you like to use as an index, 2,000 words as an index, not a good idea. Inside the database, we have a query optimizer, and the more indexes we add, the more alternatives the optimizer need to look at. If you have just one index, then there aren't so many alternatives. It will try with or without the index, see which one is faster. Now, if you have many indexes, it will have to look at each one and which will be faster, using this index or not, this combination of indexes or not. So it's more work for the optimizer. So my bottom line here is to say, don't add indices if you don't think they're going to be useful. You know they will be useful. It's not a default to add an index. Foreign keys, in MySQL, it will ask for an index if you try to create a foreign key, or it will create an index already, because you need to be able to check if what you refer to, or that nothing is referring to you when you delete nodes or insert nodes. And if you have joins or order by or distinct, for all of this, it will be convenient to have an index. And if you have min and max. So add an index if you know this is going to reduce the search time and it's not going to slow down the update time too badly. So if there are fields that are constantly updated, it's probably not a good idea to add an index on it, because it's going to slow down the updates. And this is the index specificity that I talked about. So if you like gender, you have only two values. and you may probably need to scan the whole file anyway, so you just ignore using an index. And long strings. Okay, I'm seeing we're not going to be able to go through all of this. I'm just going to be very quick on the database engines, saying that in the different database systems, there are many possible engines. In MySQL, we have been using InnoDB, but there's also the old MyESAM that's used as an indexed file structure. So on InnoDB, the database file is unordered. It's just a heap storing everything. Last record is at the end of the file. But in ESAM, they are sorted based on the primary key. And you have memory database. You have an archive database that can be used just for storing, no updates. And if you look at the, and you have cluster databases. So you can see even within the MySQL family, you have alternative database engines. And depending on what you want, it may be an advantage to have a memory database. You may need a B-tree and everything that comes with there. You may need to have a cluster databases. So here you can look at what is the storage limit. Do you need transactions? Locking, that's Dipti going to talk about locking and concurrency. Do you need B-tree index or want to have? Do you want to have a hash index? You know what that is from Frula's course as well. Do you want to search free text? Based on this, you need to choose which is your database engines. That's part of the physical design. So you know what the tables are and everything. Now you need to decide what is your, is it performance? Do you really need high performance? Then you're going to go for the memory database. But as you see, with the memory database, there are no indexes. Because why not? In memory, scanning is much faster than going through a complex structure. The B-tree structure is easier just to scan through the whole file, much faster than going through an advanced structure. So there are no such structures in there. But it's much faster anyway, because everything is in memory. And you may introduce redundancy. So in the when you design relations, then Dipti was asking you to normalize, to make sure that it was in third normal form, because we don't want redundancies, we don't want update anomalies. Now, the problem here is that you may not get the performance you want, because you need to join tables for every operation. You need to join, because normalized means that we split in different tables. So you may have a performance problem. So in the end, you say, okay, what's better? Having the risk of inconsistencies or not being able to answer the user's questions in the available time. So before we ship the database or actually start launching it, we may actually reverse some of the normalization. We may decide, rather than always have to join zip code and the name of the city, we may store the name of the city inside the same table where the zip code is, even though we know that it breaks first normal form. But we also know that zip codes don't change very often, and there's no big risk if they get a bit out of sync. So, and we can have tools to go through and clean up and get it back in a consistent state. So because of that, we may accept a database that is not in the third normal form. But the way we would like you to think there is to say, we would like it to be normal form unless we have a problem. If we have performance problems, then we start looking into denormalizing. We don't start by saying, oh, we think this is going to be too slow, so we're going to have it denormalized in the very beginning. So keep it nice and clean and normalized until we realize that we have a problem. Then it's time to think of something else. So that is pretty much the what you could say is the physical modeling. So now you know, first we try to understand the user needs. We convert it into conceptual model. From the conceptual model, we make it into a relational model or a logical model where we have all the relations, we have the foreign keys, we have the data types, we have everything, and we create the tables. And then we decide on what database engine, what indexes do we want, and do we need to fine-tune to get the performance we need, meaning denormalizing or making some additional adjustments to have it work effectively. The other thing is that we talked about yesterday in the threat picture, there may be catastrophes or there may be break-ins, there may be things happen that would damage some of our data. And in the database system, we don't want data to be changeable. So if a data has been updated, we would like the database consistency to be there. And if something happens, we would like to be able to get back to that state. And for that, it's not enough to just run a backup of all the database files. So as you probably understood from this, in the end, everything in your database will be stored in one file or the other. And we can, of course, backup files. But the problem is that the files may not contain a consistent version of the database. And that's what we're going to look at now. This is kind of in the DevOps. You heard the term DevOps? So development and operations should not be too separated, because as developers, we need to understand what are the operational challenges. And those operating a system have knowledge about what is convenient, what is good from an operational perspective, and that should be taken into account when we do the development. So this is kind of what I'm trying to say here, is that developers should not think that this is something just for those working on data network operations. No, this is important stuff for development as well, because this is kind of things that we need to face and think about from a development point of view. Now, this is a few years ago. The Telenor, they had their mobile network was inaccessible for 2.5 hours. Because, I don't know if you can read it, because where they were upgrading, somebody deleted the whole customer database. And that was a major inconvenience, you would say. So an operational, it just says it was deleted by accident. Okay, I was reading somebody pushed a button they shouldn't have pushed. Delete everything. So, and it takes time to rebuild. But the thing is that they were able to rebuild this. So even though the whole database was deleted, they rebuilt it. I can't guarantee that it was all updated. Probably was some last minute records lost, maybe. I don't know. But ideally, and the Norwegian Telenor was given a fine, 9 million Norwegian kroner, for that accident, because that shouldn't happen. We talked about transactions a little bit. I talked about commit and rollback when we talked about PDO. And the transaction is a kind of a minimal unit. So if you transfer money, and this is what Dipt is going to talk a lot about next week. If you transfer money from one account to the other account, you would like the money to be completely transferred and you're happy, or you would like the operation to be canceled and you're equally happy. You know that you haven't transferred, so you could try again. But you don't want the money to disappear from your account but not being put into your other account. Then money gets lost. Or you can hope for that money has been put into the one account but not deleting from the other account, and then you have more money than you had in the beginning. But these things you don't want it to happen. So you would like to have, think of a program as a series of transactions. They are either completely done or they're not done. And this is the unit of operation from bringing database from one consistent state to the other. The fact that money has been taken out of your account is inconsistent until you have been able to put it into the other account. Then it's consistent again, because money was taken from one into the other. If you stop midway, it's inconsistent because money disappeared, and we don't want that to happen. Now, this is the responsibility of the data manager. You can see the data manager has a buffer manager and a recovery manager. And we need to understand a little bit about the buffer manager to understand why the recovery manager is doing the job it's doing. So what is the buffer manager responsible for? It's responsible for storing changes on the disk itself. So the buffer manager has the database buffers and responsible and decides when these should be written to the disk. Because the disk is slow, you may not want to write it to the disk immediately every time. You would batch up a little bit of changes and then you write to disk. or you will say, okay, you can go on, and I'm going to write it to disk when I have time. So it's not slowing down the transactions by saying, I need to write to disk. But that means that there may be data in buffer that's not on disk. Or vice versa, or the other thing is that when it writes to disk, it may write to disk something that has not been committed. So it may write to disk that you have moved money, took money away from one account, but have not yet written to disk that it's been put into another account. So you are in the middle of a transaction. Some changes are just in the buffer. Some changes are on disk, and they may not be consistent. You follow me? So you transfer money here to there. This is written to disk. Some others, but the other part is still in memory. Power goes off, meaning that everything that's in memory is lost, but what's on disk is there. Some of it shouldn't have been there, and some of it should have been there. You see the problem? And that's... And I don't know if you ever tried to do this. The file system is the same. You may write a file, and your program crashes, and it's not written to the file. Why? Because you haven't flushed the buffers. I don't know if you ever know you are trying to force flush buffers, but when you deal with programming and file systems, sometimes you will want to make sure that everything is written to disk, then you need to flush. It's the same mechanism that's happening here. So that's what the database recovery manager needs to do. It needs to, after a crash, the power went off, there was a fire, after a crash, it has data on disk and needs to figure out what do I need to do to change what's on the disk so it's in a consistent state. Because now it has fragments of data that shouldn't be there, and there is data that should have been there that's not yet there. So it needs to clean up these things. So depending on what our problem is, whether it's just power failure or disk crash failure, we need to do different actions. But what's most important for us is to go there. What's more important to us is to understand what the recovery manager needs to do. It needs to remove stuff that shouldn't be on the disk. It needs to put onto disk data that should have been there. You follow me? The mechanisms it's using for that is they're called undo and redo. Undo means remove from disk what shouldn't be there. Redo means reapply changes, run the changes onto disk or onto the database again so that the database has these changes that were not written to disk. So one problem, you have data in memory that should have been written to disk, they weren't, so you need to redo it. When you start a system before any user can start using database, you need to redo it. Make sure that those changes are put back in the database. And if you had written to disk something that was not yet committed, that shouldn't have been completed, then you need to delete them. You need to remove them from the database before you can get started. And this looks like this. So if you think about a system, the T's are transactions, T1 to T6. The capital T's, the lowercase t's are time, so it's time zero is when we started, and time f is the time of failure. We can see a transaction one started at T0, and when it crashed, it was still running. Transaction T2 started zero, and it stopped correctly, it was committed before the TC and before TF. MC T3, T4, T5, they were all started and successfully committed. When T6 was also started, but it was started after TC, but it was running by the time of failure. So what is the TC? That's a checkpoint time. That's a time where everything was written to disk. So at the point C, all data, all updates were written to disk. So, but for the other, there may still be data in the buffers. You see that? For anything happening after TC, there may be data in the buffers that are not written to disk, and there may be data from T1 and T6 written to disk, but they didn't succeed, so they need to be wiped all out. Because the thing is that those who have been committed, they need to be put back on the database. Those that were interrupted, did not yet commit, we need to undo all the changes. You follow me? So for T1 and T6, at the time of crash, the consistent state is that T2, 3, 4, and 5 were committed, so their data should be put back in the database. T1 and T6 were aborted in the middle, so we need to clean out any changes on those two transactions. So T1 and T6 will have to be undone. The changes have to be reverted. And for T2 to T5, we need to redo it. We need to reinsert the values. And this is happening in the log file. So every database operation is going to be logged. So whenever there is a change, we will put it in the log. And the log file is critical. We can't have any problems with the log file. It needs to be there because that's our own only hope. So log file will keep everything. So even if it's not written to a disk, it needs to be written to the log file. So from the log file, we can figure out what happened. I'm going to run a few minutes over time here. But what's important here is to see that we have the transactions, and we have what operation, and we have what's called the before and after image. We know the value it had before this operation and what it has afterwards. And if we want to do a redo, we need to put back the after value. If we have to do an undo, we have to put in the before image. And if you think about it, if you undo, you have to start from now and undo back in history. If you redo, you have to start from the beginning and redo until the end. Because of that, we have the pointers, the previous pointer and the next pointer. So if you look to the right here, we have pointers that will make it quick for us to find the previous operation in the chain and the next operation in the chain. Because if you like to redo by going back, and undo by going back, and redo by going forward. Okay, that was very quickly about what we need to do in the crash. So, from this compressed lecture, what I think you should be able to bring along, and this is definitely, you know it, but you haven't been working to the level where you can discuss much or go in depth, to analyze in depth, but what I think you should understand would be that indexes, they will often help you to speed up queries, but they it can be used to enforce primary and foreign key or entity and referential integrity, but they will slow down inserts and updates and deletions because they need to not just update the data file but also the index file. So if you know that about indexes, then and make sure that you don't add an index unless you know that it's going to speed up. And you know that there is usually a variety of database engines, and you need to pick one that fits with the needs of the application in terms of speed and data and distribution. And if you have a performance problem, you may choose to denormalize. You just need to be careful then. You need to know that when data is denormalized, you have the risk of inconsistent data. You have the risk you will most likely have redundancy. And redundancy may cause inconsistencies. So you need to make sure that you have mechanisms to deal with that risk. And finally,